This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. And welcome to The Morning Run. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews and news and analysis. It's only midweek. It's Wednesday. It marks the first week since we had that major transformation in Malaysian society and politics with the election of the Pakatan Harapan government. But it's only been a week. Think about the news flow.
It's been a year, the amount of changes. What a difference a week makes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it feels, we were just talking about this in the newsroom yesterday. So it's only Tuesday, but it feels like we're already like Friday, or it's already end of the week, but we're not even near that there yet, you know. And we're only, as you said, now we're only in Wednesday.
You know, one thing that did not change is the fact that yesterday was the deadline for e-filing your income tax. Now, if you missed it, you missed it. So even in this new world of led by Pakatan Harapan, you still have to pay your taxes. Apparently, I think even more so.
Well, you know what? Life goes on, no matter what what new government may be, you still have to do. I mean, you still have to turn up for work. You still have to pay your taxes, your bills. If not, no electricity. That doesn't
true.
Change, right?
Yeah. You know, and I went because I'm the kind of person who will do everything, at least with regard to my tax returns, at the last minute. And because I had problems with my password, I actually went to one of these tax department.
Oh, really?
You got that sorted out?
Yeah, it was so easy. It was painless.
Credit where credit's due. The process is actually very streamlined and very easy.
Yeah, and they were wonderful. And so all I can say is that, you know, I tweeted out this. I said, I'm so happy with the tax department. I said, he dope, you know.
They are very good. They went online, and it's actually an extended deadline. The actual deadline is April 30th, and they've extended it for e-filing for me until May 15th.
Right. Okay. What also hasn't changed is that today Malaysia celebrates Teachers' Day. Now, it's the 16th of May, and we're celebrating, and we're not quite in step with the rest of the world. The World Teachers' Day is October the 5th. And the reason we're celebrating it today, unlike the rest of the world, is because of something called the Razak Report.
I didn't know that, Sharad. I thought that Teachers' Day today that we celebrate, you know, May 16th, is Teachers' Day everywhere around the world, but it's not. And that was, for me, a big surprise. I also just found out that we don't follow Mother's Day as the one in the UK.
Oh.
So we follow the US Mother's Day. So last Sunday, where everyone went out to celebrate Mother's Day, that's not in step with the UK, if I'm not mistaken. So, so happy Teachers' Day to all the teachers
out
there.
Shout out to the teachers.
Right, so in 1956, the Federal Legislative Council, this was before even Malaya was independent, accepted recommendations of the Education Committee report as the basis for education policy for the country. The report became known as the Razak Report.
Right.
Because I think that Razak is a reference to the father of Najib Razak.
Of course, yes. Sharad, your mother's a teacher, isn't she?
She is indeed, yeah.
And My parents were teachers too.
My dad's a teacher.
You see what I mean? I mean, the building blocks of society were built on teachers.
Absolutely.
Look at
the wonderful children they've spawned.
I know, right?
My mother might object to the word spawn, but never mind. Okay, we'll be back with more news and analysis and views and opinions. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Rolling Stones with Wild Horses. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Leave your name on the WhatsApp so we know who you are. We can do a shout out to you. If you want to remain anonymous, don't put your name there because, well,
why would you want to remain anonymous, right?
In this day and age, when, you know, we've had this really wonderful, well, it's a possibility at least of an opening up. And I think, don't be anonymous, you know, stand up for what you believe. Interestingly enough, many people who are associated with the outgoing administration of Najib Razak, and of course, just the whole Barisan Nasional's 6-decade rule, is Khairi Jamaluddin. He's trying to explain things to the public about why he took the stance he took, which is essentially to support Najib Razak. Now, he says that his biggest regret was not speaking truth to Najib, his boss.
Well, okay, so there are a couple of ways to read this, but one of the things that I found curious about his comments in this interview with Channel News Asia, he said, "We didn't want to bell the cat." And I hadn't heard that expression before. I didn't know what that meant. Do you know what it means?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Well, it means to, for somebody who has the courage to control something that is dangerous, right? And so in this case, you put a bell on the cat so that everybody knows what. So it's right. It's about recognizing. But what he does now is he tries to make it sound like the problem is only Najib and that he, you know, was powerless to, in this instance, to bell the cat.
Well, when I read this, also one comes to my mind is the timing of it. Why is he talking about this now? Why is he saying that he regrets telling Najib the truth? I mean, it's a little too late, right? Like the song, 25 minutes too late. I mean, seriously, Khairi, you should have told
Khairi
Najib.
Learns to
walk,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
All right, okay.
Producer's asking what song.
I do have to ask though. When you see this, when he says that, okay, he regrets not telling Najib the truth, is it that he regretted not telling Najib about the sentiments on the ground and protecting Najib from the ugly truth of perhaps losing, of UMNO losing support? Is that how you read it? Because for me, that's how I read it. I read it as Khairi or KJ believes that maybe he should have been more honest with Najib to say, well, you know what, we're actually losing a lot of goodwill from the people. The sentiment on the ground reflects this.
Yeah, I think that's what he, in the article, he says that we must not allow leaders in UMNO to be detached from reality and not ask the tough questions. But what I don't understand is, if you have that relationship with your boss and as a team, it's good to be frank. That is the mistake I feel, it's important not to surround yourself with yes men all the time just to please or like shoe polish the boss. I think that's very dangerous.
Yeah, but the issue really is he's trying to absolve himself of responsibility. So interesting, if you go back to the expression belling the cat. It comes from a fable, Aesop fable, in which a group of mice decide that one of them has to harness a bell on a murderous cat so that its jingle will warn the rest of the approach of the cat.
Is that where it comes from?
That's right.
Okay.
So the thing about it is, is and was Khairi Jamaluddin a mouse? Was he somebody equally, in some sense, a victim? And, he kind of says, I didn't have the courage to do that. But really, or was he in fact one of the many cats, the fat cats? And must say, the tone in which he took in public discourse suggested, didn't suggest that he knew something and was struggling to, inform the public. This is not just a question of, shoe polishing the boss. This is about the national interest.
What do you think his response should be then? I mean, what tone should he have taken?
At this point in time, I think for all those people who stood silently, and I think even BFM as an organization, we are complicit in the system. I mean, there were a lot of things that we did not do during the time of the last administration. We censored things and so on and so forth. So I think that I think a bit of humility is on his part. In fact, if I was him or his media advisor, I'd say, don't say too much. That would be my advice to him.
Well, maybe he's speaking off the cuff.
No, you're giving an interview to Channel News Asia. You're not speaking off the cuff.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Really? You think this is coordinated?
Of course. I mean, he's gone on Channel News Asia.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to think about how to. I mean, if you were advising Kyrie of his where to go
next.
I'd
be a very rich man, I think, if I was.
The idea is, would you now be honest, right? So someone on Twitter said, I saw something really funny on Twitter about this, you know, him needing to be honest to Najib. And they said, well, you know, the Mamak shot was empty. You could have told him then. In
true.
Reference to the video where he was just him and Najib at the Mamak shot.
Well, tell us what you think. I personally don't think we should be too invested in Kyrie Jamaluddin's future necessarily. I mean, if you want to, you can be. But that's not the most important thing for the country at this point in time. But tell us what you think. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We take a look at the media that's trying to also deal with this new landscape. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Ala Las with Tell Me What's On Your Mind. I'm Sharad Kutin, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. Tell us what's on your mind, I say. Well, okay. In fact, this is for all of you. If you're out there on the road, on the way to work or taking your kids to school, tell us what's on your mind. You can always tweet us at BFM Radio or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. In fact, one of you have. Daniel, thank you so much, Daniel, for your message. On WhatsApp, you said Kyrie's case and other members of UMNO are similar to the story of the king and his invisible clothes. So that's again
really good. Well spotted there. That's I mean, you brought up Aesop fables earlier, Sharad, and is this a fable?
Yeah, it's a fable, right? But it's not Aesop. What is it? It's the Grimm brothers or something.
Yeah. Could be. Yes, very good.
Okay, so what we do have is the question of who actively participated in the cover up of 1MDB. We see already that happening. And we know heads are going to roll. People are going to be tried for their responsibility in that case. But there are other issues around complicity. What we do see happening in the media, because the media was very important in creating a spinning a narrative for the Najib administration, is the fact that appointments at Utusan Melayu and Bernama Media Prima are looking like they're going to be changing as a direct consequence of the results.
Yeah, so you can see Media Prima and Utusan leadership, that there has already been some changes there. As for Bernama, there's this story actually in the media where there's the Bernama's Twitter account agreed with a call for his chief editor to be fired. When I read this, I was like, okay.
So what happened was there was a tweet by Rizal Zain who called for the, I guess, firing of the editor-in-chief of Bernama. And Bernama actually liked that tweet. So I guess it goes to show. So I'm just wondering, is this really the new, brave new media world where you've got someone who's in charge of the Bernama social account liking a netizen's call to fire its editor-in-chief?
Yeah, it seems, like people are trying, that people's true feelings are coming up, perhaps. And in the words of Wot Doyo, there was a little part of me that was pro-Pakatan, even though I milked the system for what it was worth, right? So, okay, so there's that. But, I must say, in contrast, there are individuals like Said Zahari. I'm going to tweet a link to the late Said Zahari, who was actually the editor of Utusan Melayu, who fought the political takeover of Utusan and, who truly stand, heads above all these individuals who are now trying to restore their image in the public.
Okay. Well, there's also Mustafa Kamil. He was the former group editor of New Straits Times newspaper, and this happened in 2016. He stepped down, and it was really a big thing among the whole journalist community then, because he made a Facebook post about it and he was very vocal.
What did
he say? That he stepped down because he quit after soul searching over the 1MDB scandal. And
all
he
right.
said that, yeah, he weighed the situation for a long time and, as he could. But when an American newspaper, he didn't name which one, that is headquartered somewhere in New York, wrote a story and got nominated for Pulitzer, and the issue happened right under my nose. Then he said he began to seriously search his conscience and ask himself, why am I in journalism in the first place?
Yeah,
I remember,
so
yeah,
why
when
was
he
this story? Why was this story being championed by foreign media? Had local media, been, I guess, remiss in its duty to follow up with this story, right? just to come back very quickly to the Bernama tweet, I just want to ask you guys whether this really can be seen as a championing or endorsing a call for to fire the editor-in-chief. Or was this someone's, you know, late night mistake to, you know how they say on the Twitter handles, retweets are not endorsements? I'm just wondering whether this was somebody's acknowledgement of this netizen's call.
Right, so it wasn't a retweet, it was a like.
It was a like.
And in fact,
yes.
A like is an endorsement, I think, typically. Though I think on BFM we tend to like.
We like everything. I mean,
we like you because you're participating in the conversation.
Yeah, so there have been criticisms of BFM on Twitter that we've liked to show you that we acknowledge and we engage and we hear you, right? So could this be something similar to that?
Well, apparently the account has since withdrawn the like. So the light is gone now.
Oh, okay, that's worse.
Well, you know, things are
changing. That's very what yo-yo, isn't it?
Okay. Well, taking us up to the first bulletin of the morning. Sabrina Magdalene there going to be giving it to us. But before that, we have Def Leppard giving it to us with When Love and Hate Collide. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. The morning run continues. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, news and analysis. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Now, we know things have really changed when the website of the National Audit Department fails moments after it releases a report. I mean, in what world would this happen? That people would want to download a dry, you know, audit written, you know, I mean, this is a report written not by literary stars. This is by accountants.
Not a best-selling novel.
Apologies to you,
what's
Joyce.
Wrong
apologies
with
to you.
Writing reports.
People, you might not know, but Joyce, in a previous incarnation, was an accountant.
So, no offense, Joyce. I mean, accountants can be compelling, riveting people, but this report was not written by a best-selling novelist. It was written by, again, it was the Auditor General's report on MDB. And I have to say, I was one of the people who went to the site only to find that the site had crashed because I was so kepo, I wanted to go and see what it was. And I think, Sharad, it's not so much about the fact that this report was dry and, you know, hundreds of pages long and whether people would want to read it, but the fact that it was under the Official Secrets Act and now is being released to the public. That, I think, was enough to draw people's curiosity to see what was so secret in this report that you took it away from the public
sphere. View.
Yeah, trust the Malaysians to be super capable, right? And the thing is that this is a 1MDB issue. It looks like there's a lot of pent up inside everybody wants to know what it's about. I mean, I remember during the campaign period, some people said that 1MDB issue is forgotten already. Obviously, it's not, right? And
but
also,
you know, judging from the crowds that Arul Kandasamy drew to his his charamas on 1MDB, it's clear that they weren't winning the war on that narrative.
Well, I disagree that. Okay, so I don't think the 1MDB issue had been forgotten, but I do think it's not fully understood.
Mm. Yeah. It's very complex, and that's my surprise too, about the fact that people would want to read an auditor's report on an issue that's actually very complicated.
So as opposed to, say, waiting for an executive summary or waiting for the media to digest it and come up with an infographic, is it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Infographics are very useful. Thank you very much. I rely on them.
Maybe someone should come up with an infographic now. That's a good idea on the 1MDB report.
The infographic would be pages long because I really, it's not as simplistic as a flowchart would suggest.
That's right. The Edge actually has a flowchart of the money trail. Actually, should ask them to publish it again.
And
turn into a movie.
It's quite a spider web, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite convoluted.
So I think that's what I mean about it. But I'm really heartened to see. I mean, just the initial reaction was released about 7-8 hours ago, and the initial reaction on Twitter, people really just downloading, sending whatever copies they had, trying to make sense of what it is. I have to say though, in the early hours after this report has been declassified, a lot of it is all kind of factual information right now without a lot of context and relative.
Yeah. And we're going to bring some of that to you later in the day. But it's good. It must be, it's worth noting that the current Auditor General, she was not involved in the writing of this report, Tan Sri Madina Mohammed. Very interesting woman. Her husband's an UMNO member and who publicly declared that he would die for Najib.
He did say that.
He would die for Najib Razak. Oh, okay. Yeah, he did.
It was Tan Sri Madina's predecessor, Tan Sri Amrin Wang, who prepared the report.
Yeah, so this was not under, when she was in office, the report was prepared under Amrin Wang.
So I think going forward with the new government, the question of the leadership at the Auditor General's office, I think a very interesting one, because if you think about the commitments of the Pakatan Harapan government to reduce wastage, to deal with, you know, the misuse of government monies and or just, you know, and all these things, I mean, the Auditor General is going to be very important. They have been doing an excellent job despite the constraints on them. One hopes that going forward they get more freedom to do their job. Okay, we'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Fox on the Run by Sweet. I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, you can be part of this conversation. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And for you weighed in on the Kyrie Jamaluddin debacle, I mean, it's a debacle for him, really, not the nation. We have Bashir Azmin and Roland Tan. Also, we have on WhatsApp, Anonymous, which is a nice name. I think any parent would like to name their child Anonymous. Anonymous says, I don't feel anything for him. If he was guilty of keeping quiet, I can just call him somebody without courage. Actually, he says coward, but I'm going to soften it at the blow a little. Dan says, Kyrie was simply part of a systems problem. And he says his actions often spoke louder than his words, from racial rhetoric to his pseudo-populist statements. I think Anonymous mentions Kyrie's attacks on Tun, because the new prime minister.
I think, to be honest with you, Sharad, everyone's, I guess, hypersensitive at the moment. So tone is very key on Twitter, on your Facebook
Instagram
posting, and in your interviews, right? So if you were part of the previous establishment, your tone right now is what everyone is watching. And I think to get it right will be difficult. I haven't seen anyone get it right so far.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about KJ, not to go on too much about him, was that his history with Tun goes back to the time in which Tun was trying to oust Abdullah Ahmad Badawi, KJ's father-in-law. And Tun actually took up cudgels against KJ and the fourth floor boys, I think it was the expression used, these young consultants or advisors to the then Prime Minister Abdullah Ahmad Badawi. So, yeah, there's a complex history there between the two men. But maybe at this point in time, Malaysians are more interested in the future and would like to understand where this new government is taking us. Is it taking us back to the time of Mahathir's thinking about economics, or is it taking us to a different time and a different policy orientation? Now, one of the statements that has come up is a statement suggesting that Dr. Mahathir plans to reduce the size of government.
Yeah, that's right. He's saying that he wants to reduce the size of government by privatizing functions where possible and corporatizing entities to retain related workers. So similar to what he did with Telecom Malaysia back in the 1980s. So I guess all of this, he was responding to questions about civil servants. What will happen to civil servants and the size of Malaysia's civil service, whether it would be trimmed or streamlined in any way under his premiership?
Yeah, so what he has said is that they want to reduce the number of ministries and keep it to about 25. And he says for civil servants, they will not terminate them from services, but they will find a way for them to continue to work in other agencies. And I guess if they privatize them, then they'll continue working there. It's just it's a different kind of format.
But yeah, do we want to see privatization?
And also,
right?
I think you had to go back to a time in which privatization was the clarion call across the world, right? You think of Thatcherism, you think of, you know, the Reaganite policies. Antun was very much in step with that. Mm-hmm. But privatization, proved to be a much more complicated matter. It wasn't the, necessarily the good that people said it would be. And so, in fact, many economists noted failures with many of these privatized projects, some of which had to be renationalized at a huge cost to government. So we talked to Tricia Yeo from Ideas for her thoughts on avoiding the same failures of the previous privatization policies under Dr. Mahathir.
So many academics have actually been critical of this process, and there are, in fact, many lists of these many bailouts that had to take place. The one that I am familiar with is the water companies within the state of Selangor, many of which actually accrued a huge amount of debt. And that's precisely why the problem of restructuring the water industry at the moment in Selangor is so problematic. So I think a few key lessons that must not be repeated are, number one, that the process of privatization needs to be very transparently done. The people who are taking over these companies must be shown to be qualified individuals, people who are credible, companies that have the expertise in that particular area, and not just receiving these private companies or concessions because they're well connected. So that's very important, number one. Number two, I think it has to be done openly, which means that the government of the day should not necessarily just decide based on their own personal engagements, but if it is opened up to the market more generally, ensuring that all different stakeholders have an equal opportunity to run these companies. And finally, third, I think if there is an independent regulatory body that provides really good oversight over these soon-to-be privatized companies, then that would be a really good step. Because I think in the past, when the privatization happened, the regulatory agencies were either not strong, brave, or independent enough to be able to keep them in check.
That was Tricia Yeo, fellow at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or Ideas, on her thoughts about Tun Dr. Mahathir's plans to downsize the government through privatization.
Look, I'm all for reducing the role of government in business. I think government really needs to get out of business. They've proven that they're not very good at it historically. So let's see more of that going forward. I'm hoping to see that.
Yeah, the question is private enterprise good at the provision of public goods?
So, correct.
And that's also not proven not to be true. So it's not like you'd necessarily get efficiencies from privatization.
Fair point, Sharad, which is why what Tricia's saying is that there needs... Let's not rush into this. Let's do a little bit more due diligence. Let's have a bit more transparency in some of the issues or some of the areas which can be privatized, as so not to cross over to some of the social safety nets.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and taking us there, Nirvana with Bin Sun. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. This is The Morning Run. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock today. Today is, in fact, it's Teachers' Day, and so happy Teachers' Day.
Happy Teachers' Day.
Yeah, in fact, there's an interesting tweet, and this comes from Nazli, who's a senior journalist at Selangor Kini. This is a very curious one. He says, "Berpuluh tahun menendam rasa warga pendidik melepaskan geram," and this is in quotes, "beri sokongan terbuka kepada kepimpinan Azmin Ali at Majlis Sambutan Hari Guru Peringkat Kebangsaan di Putrajaya." So this is really part of a long-going saga with many of the opposition-held states, right, who had difficulties with the schools and in dealing with them.
Yeah. So I do agree. So do you want to just try a rough translation of that?
Oh, it says that after decades of repressing their feelings, the community of educators, expressed themselves openly by giving their full support to the leadership of Azmin Ali, Menteri Besar of Selangor, at a national level Teachers' Day celebration in Putrajaya.
Well, I'm just hoping, I guess, that this also marks an era of freedom for teachers to express how, to be open, maybe I guess, you know, there was a lot of manundam or mamundam rasa, as you put it so eloquently, or as the tweet put it so eloquently.
Yeah, that was Nazli, not me.
And hopefully, you know, more empowerment. You did an interview with Teach for Malaysia and Paige not too long on The Breakfast Crew, not too long ago, Sherrod, which I thought was really wonderful. Going back to the classroom is all that counts, right? Listening to what it is that students want and what teachers want, because often
I know what students want. They want less homework, and reflecting back on the time when I was a student, less homework, a lot of play, a lot more play.
You're not giving them enough credit. A lot of students want just the ability to learn in an open environment without it being pedantic, I think.
Yeah, and less homework. Less homework. Okay. Now, speaking of homework, the Council of Eminent Persons has a huge task ahead of itself in these next 100 days. And we have, because headlines like ZETI to announce tax strategy in 100 days. And this, of course, is a reference to the incoming government's commitment to abolish the GST, the Goods and Services Tax. Now, because this is much more complicated than just, you know, signing off on a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's the execution of it as well. How are they going to do this? Because everyone has already gotten on board with GST. It took a couple of years to get GST into play. I remember it was spoken about, I think, even before 2010, everyone's talking about GST, and then eventually we implemented it. And now to go back to the SST system, how are they going to do that? I think that is the question. And also, how are they going to plug the gap of the 20 billion ringgit loss?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I think those numbers, the question of loss is an interesting one, because I've heard slightly different numbers. Mm. But at any rate, there is going to be a gap, a shortfall in terms of taxes, revenues to the government. So the question is, how are they going to follow?
Yeah, so yesterday, I believe Tan Sri Zetti had a meeting with different stakeholders, fund managers and people involved. And what came out from that essentially was she's saying, look, there's no turning back from this GST issue. It's a promise that was made and the government will keep it. It's just a matter of how to implement it, right? Do we zero rise the GST from 6% to 0%? All that we know at this point in time, it's still early days. We have to give them, you know, some time for them to implement this. But what we do know is the idea is for the GST removal to be part of a comprehensive tax regime restructuring or relook. Mm. So, I have to say, I've got complete confidence in Zetti to do it. If anyone can do it, she can.
Well, you know, I think in this new era of freedom, one has to keep one's critical hat on, and
for
not just,
sure, for sure. Know. But the confidence and the perception of confidence is there, given that she's leading the charge for this.
Right. Okay. And also, I guess it's important to note that she obviously philosophically agrees with the strategy. Right. She doesn't work for the government. She's signed on to it voluntarily as a member of the council. Now, we spoke to Adli Amirullah, who's the coordinator for the economics unit at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. We asked Adli for his views on the potential problems with removing GST.
Well, first and foremost, the first problem that I see is the sunk cost that the previous government have incurred when implementing and designing the GST. As we all understand, the GST was actually designed like 2 years before it was implemented in 2015. So I'm sure there was a cost that had already been incurred by the government, and that is actually a problem. I mean, we have to know there are costs incurred, and it is a concern that we should raise. And the second problem that I see is that the businesses that actually have implemented GST, that actually have invested their own money to change the system to GST, and if they change back to SST or other tax regime, then the businesses might incur this again, the loss that they have to invest again to change the tax system. They have to send their accountant to learn the new tax system. So it is actually a hassle and actually a business cost of production for them, actually. And the third one, the problem that I see is that when we read into the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto, one of the motivation that they want to abolish GST is they say it can reduce the cost of living. So the question here is there a certainty that removing GST will reduce the general prices in the economy? Meaning that is there a certainty that if we remove GST, we will reduce the cost of living problem? And there is also an argument I read by the analyst saying that if we revert back to the old system SST, the prices might be higher because of the double taxation, and it will not decrease for this particular context. So yeah, these three major problems that I'm seeing right now.
Okay, so one of the points that Adli brought up was the cost that businesses could incur in switching back to SST. But the question really is, won't that cost be less, seeing as SST is a system that businesses were using before, that it was once used to?
Yeah, it is true that some business might have easier access to the old system. But again, when the government decided to change to GST, a lot of businesses actually have spent quite a lot of amount of money for them to learn the GST system. And even my friends that are working in auditor and accountant, will be a big headache for them if the government decided to change back to SST, because the tax system changing and you need to learn something new. Or maybe what I would like to say that it is something that is not easy. I mean, it's possible, but it is not easy, and it might cause a lot of trouble for quite some time when it changed or it revert back.
And finally, we asked him where the government could look for income in terms as it loses income from GST.
Well, my perspective is not looking for other income. My perspective will be reduce the current expenditure. As we all know, the current government expenditure on operating expenditure is quite high. So Tun Mahathir's intention to reduce the number of ministries and convert the civil servant to private sector is actually commendable, meaning that if we thinking about reducing our revenue, we also have to think about reducing the expenditure. So it will be balanced there.
That was economist Adli Amirullah, coordinator for the economics unit at IDEAS.
Yeah, so he brought up a few good points. And I think these are points that we will have to be watching closely over the next few days. I came across a comment that Maidin, Tan Sri, Dato' Amir Ali Maidin made yesterday, I think, regarding the SST and GST. And he said that, you know, yes, it was a huge problem to implement the GST system, but now going back to SST, it could be easier. They estimated that they spent about 20 million ringgit into IT and IT systems to implement the GST. So you imagine the cost incurred to switch it back,
yeah,
right?
To reverse that. And it's not just the IT, it's not just the systems, it's the people as well to run the systems, to understand it. That's also, you have to do retraining and all that.
Yeah, but in the larger, the bigger picture really is the cost to government. Government has to do a lot of things. One of the things is to deal with 1MDB and the cost that of debt servicing that 1MDB is imposing on it. So one of the estimates, I think, came out of the auditor's report that says that 42.26 billion ringgit is required to settle the principal costs and interest for loans maturing between November 2015 and May 2039. It also notes, interestingly enough, that 1MDB would require at least 1.52 billion ringgit per year from November 2015 to May 2024 to settle its loans. I mean, there's a huge problem with 1MDB and the burden this new government is going to take because of the previous government and its decision to have this 1MDB thing. Also, I think moving forward, the question of asset recovery and how much of money's lost can be recovered, or assets are there globally. So all of that, I think, big headache for the government, not just the proprietors who have to deal with it.
Cleaning up the finances, right? Yeah, so getting the finances in order is the first, first
order
of the day. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll be back with more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.